questions and forces behind how we developed the freedoms, the ethics, the arts, the politics of Western civilization will be at the heart of a new centre that officially opens this coming week. The Ramsey Centre for Western Civilization is part of the legacy of Paul Ramsey, the health and media entrepreneur who left an astonishing estate of $3 billion to a bequest for philanthropic causes. The centre will promote the study and understanding of the Western canon. And interestingly, the centre's board brings together political heavyweights of different stripes, former Labour leader and US Ambassador Kim Beazley, the former National Secretary of the powerful right-wing retail union, the Shoppies, as it was called, Joe de Bruin, and former Prime Ministers Tony Abbott and John Howard, who chairs the board. Now, radically for this country, it'll offer full scholarships to study a new undergraduate degree in Western civilization, to be taught in small classes of about six students in a Socratic style, with a focus on the great books of the past. It's a similar model to the esteemed American schools of St. John's, Amherst and Columbia, and of course Oxford University's famed system, which is even smaller tutorial sizes. Professor Simon Haynes is a humanities specialist with particular interest in Romantic poets, but he also worked at the ONA, the important Office of National Assessments, thus exposed to international policy making, and he was headhunted to be the CEO of the centre. Welcome to Saturday Extra.
Thank you, Geraldine. Pleasure to be here. Honour to be here.
Congratulations. What a marvellous challenge.
It is extremely exciting. It came completely out of the blue, as you've indicated, but I'm very excited. It's a wonderful thing. In fact, it's as you mentioned, it is the largest endowment in the humanities and liberal arts in Australian history. And even by the standards of the UK or even the US, it's eye-wateringly generous. Mm. So it's really an enormous opportunity to make a big difference in that sector.
So do we know what the late Paul Ramsey's thinking was behind the creation of the centre?
I never had the pleasure of meeting Paul, I'm very sad to say. He passed away 3 years ago. But as I understand it, he was, as you said, a very successful businessman. His education stopped after school, so he wasn't university educated. But as I understand it, he came to feel during his working life as a businessman that awareness of what we owe to our Western traditions, institutions, and heritage was lacking. It wasn't as profound, as sharp, particularly, he thought, among young people, or so I'm told, as it should be. And so he made this decision that he wanted to try to address that through this endowment, which was an extraordinary and visionary thing for somebody like him to do.
And I gather that he said that, and everybody knew it was around him, but he didn't give details, so you've got to sketch the page.
Yeah, there's had to, but this was before I came on board. There was a fair bit of sketching that went on before that. That's right. Yeah.
So the centre will have a life of its own,
yes.
But one of the first forays you've made is to establish an undergraduate and postgraduate degree program. And I understand you'll announce which two universities will offer the undergraduate degree next.
Okay, well, so just to clarify, so there's two things there, Geraldine. The postgraduate scholarships, which will be rolled out a little bit later, probably late in 2019. And this will be for study, this will be for applicants anywhere in the country. So a nationwide scholarship on the model of the Rhodes Scholarship or the Monash or something.
So they won't have had to have done an undergraduate
degree.
Exactly.
They won't even necessarily be from the universities that we partner with to do the undergraduate stuff. They can be from anywhere across the country and they'll probably be 25. But the other one is probably where most of the resources will be devoted. And as you've said, we'll be partnering with initially two universities, possibly a third one further down the track. And those two universities will be in New South Wales and the ACT, which is what Mr. Ramsey specified, being a Sydney boy. And the partnerships with the universities will have two strands, really. One is the undergraduate scholarships, as you mentioned, very generous. Probably as generous as any undergraduate scholarships in the country. So they will defray the full cost of living for whichever students get them, plus a contribution, we hope, to fees as well. So there'll be good scholarships. And there will be an emphasis on residential students, if possible, because we'd like the student group to form a kind of esprit de corps, like a cohort, if we can. So that's the scholarship side. But also there'll be sufficient funding to enable the universities to hire new staff. So there's a staff side as well. Can't say exactly how many, but 6, 8, something like that, new staff within the arts faculties to teach the degrees.
So these will be in parallel to existing degrees. You'll imagine people do double degrees.
Oh, yes, absolutely. The scholarships, in fact, will be provided to pay for both degrees. If a student wishes to do, for example, a BA brackets Western Civ, which is what we will be, / LLB, then the scholarship will pay 5 years for the full degree. So you get your law studies funded as well as your art studies. And within the BA, basically this will just be rolled out like another named BA as universities already do within existing arts faculties. But there will be quite a significant group of compulsory core courses on Western civilization to distinguish it from other arts degrees.
Now, will you have control over the staff who teach this?
Control, no. Because after all, university autonomy is extremely important, and somebody like me with a university background respects that. We hope to have at least a presence on selection committees, which is standard practice in these things where an outside funding agency is involved. But no, not control, just influence of some sort.
Now, I ask that because I think Gerard Henderson has written that he imagines that, in effect, Paul Ramsey and yourselves are seeking to possibly counter the sense that in universities there's a sense of critique of the Western tradition rather than celebration, and that he can't see how you're going to be able to cut through this given the way in which universities are structured and the whole tone of humanities these days.
Yeah, we will be asking that there be careful auditing of how these degrees work. And if we feel that it's not going in the direction of an appreciation of Western civilization, which is what we're all about, then we will have the scope to withdraw the funding. So I know that Mr. Henderson has said this, but I think he needn't be too anxious.
I mean, for instance, if we take the, which I did a lot on, imperialism, the 19th century colonialism, which has really, I'd suggest to you, been a marker boy in a rethinking of the values of Western civilization. And there's a lot of debate around colonialism, and it's ongoing to the present day and affecting our foreign affairs. Now, that's a really tricky one. How are you going to think about that?
Well, I think the way to think about that is that if you think back to, let's suppose we think back to the civil rights movements of the 60s and 70s, an era that you and I both kind of grew up in some ways, that rights agenda has really taken hold of thinking in society at large, as well as in universities, over the 30 or 40 years, and that's been great. And it's exposed many social justice abuses that needed to be exposed, but it's also had a fragmenting effect. And this is why you see such a lot of thinking now about identity politics. It becomes almost more important to think about race and gender and colonialism, as you've mentioned, or class, than to remember the big picture, to remember the civilization within which it became possible to run those critiques of abuses. And if anything, you know, an unpleasant consequence of the rights movements of that era is this fragmenting and a sense that, you remember the old expression, what was it, stick it to the man. The idea that the thought became, took hold, that big government, you know, in a sense, Western civilization itself was to blame for all these terrible things that had happened. And the positives, that is the big framework within which these critiques become possible, because we have a liberal civilization, was forgotten. So we're hoping to redress that balance a bit and just remind students or teach students that there is a bigger picture.
Well, I suppose there was a sense of countering the smugness that actually dominated the era of imperialism with the scramble for Africa, et cetera, et cetera, as a sense that there was a superiority to Western civilization, and that it would be to the benefit of everybody, even if they had nothing to do with it, to have it imposed upon them. Yeah. So there's been a corrective of that, I suppose.
Yes, that's right. And sometimes the pendulum can swing too far the other way. And the corrective has become so entrenched in our minds that we've forgotten the positives.
Now, I'd also suggest to you that World War II, the conflagrations of both World Wars I and II, was another massive, a sort of halt to any sense that this was a superior civilization as it absolutely ripped itself apart. Mm. How do you respond to that? Because quite a few people have made that notion. It's led to the whole postmodern corrective.
Yeah, and I think one consequence of that has been that, for example, a lot of history courses, a lot of humanities courses have been about the world of the 20th century and the post-war world. But there's an awful lot that happened before. And I think we've become presentist in the way that we think about the West. And we've forgotten about that 2,500 years of extraordinary tradition of thinking about all sorts of things that underpin our values and our institutions and focus completely on the last 1,500 years.
Spoken like a true English
literature
specialist.
There's that lovely saying, was it Zhou Enlai who, talking of Romanticism, when he was asked what he thought the consequences of the French Revolution were, he said, too soon to say.
Too early to say, that's right.
And the degree, you know, it'll begin with Greek civilization, with Socrates and Pericles and Homer. So that's a rather longer perspective.
Middle Ages are being revived a lot too,
yeah,
I've been
and
noticing.
In fact, what I've found in the course of talking to universities in the last few months is that there's huge student interest in ancient history, classics and ancient history.
There certainly is. We've just got Sue Ingledon has said a text in, is it going to be told through the male gaze? there'll be quite a few people asking this question.
It's perfectly well, it's going to be taught by universities. And gender balance in universities is pretty good, as far as I know. In fact, if I look at my classes in English departments over the last 20 years, there's been increasing, it tends to be 80-20 women. I'm talking about the students. So, yeah.
Well, look, we could keep talking, but we won't. Well, look, good luck, and I shall look forward to seeing the announcement next week, and you have your work cut out. It'll be a marvellous job.
It'll be a lot of fun.
Thank you very much indeed for joining us.
Thank you.
Professor Simon Haynes has been my guest, the CEO of a new Ramsey Centre for Western Civilization, and that'll be announced next week with the 10 universities tendered to do the work, and 2 will be announced next week.